and welcome to this week's episode of This Is My Son. This week I have with me a dear friend of mine and the spouse of last week's guest. It is your pal from online, popular artist and commentator. Is that accurate? Are you a commentator?
Sure.
Our friend Mouse.
Hello, Kathy Fisher from Michigan.
You know, no one's really pointed out the state of my origin in previous episodes.
It's an important thing to know about you, to know the full context of your humanity.
So do you think that the fact that I was born and raised and schooled in Michigan will affect the way that this episode will turn out?
That is a likelihood. Regional differences, I think, are really important when knowing when knowing and understanding a human being. I know definitely, like Chris. Chris is also from Michigan, but I'm from the Deep South. that definitely colors our perspectives on a lot of different subjects. And then Michigan in particular, and I've lived in Minnesota, and it's like there's definitely someone. It's like I know someone who's from Minnesota. It's like I can tell, or someone from Michigan, or someone from Vermont. Vermont is a very specific place that people are from as well.
Yeah, there definitely are some states that have a stronger identity than others. And I would say, you know, the South too is a region, and I don't know probably enough about the South to make the individual state distinctions, but I can get regional, like I can get sub areas of the South.
Oh yeah, so yeah, I'm definitely from Southeast Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, and like my perspective is going to be so different from someone from Texas. Like people from Texas are like space aliens to me.
Well, like Texas is its own thing, right? Texas
it's totally its own thing. It's like
you don't mess with Texas.
I mean I try not to. They're armed generally.
It's dangerous. Don't mess with those folks.
No, Texas is a really cool microcosm of American culture. They're super interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of these days this is going to be the major a catch for this show, if I can get it. I would like to interview my good friend Zach, who is from Michigan, has lived in California, Washington, D.C., and is now in Amarillo, Texas. And I just would like to get his viewpoints. All of his viewpoints.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when we got together last winter holiday, like it was fascinating hearing about his life in Amarillo. Seems like a very unique place.
Unique and also super bleak for a culturally, you know, educated, advanced, intelligent person like him. But anyways, that's very besides the fact for this podcast. Let's get into it, because we had a semi-unique situation this week where you pitched to me both your son and which son of mine you wanted me to talk about.
I'm glad you took me up on that offer, because I know that this particular son is like really important to you, and I wanted to snatch that.
It's so ambitious. Like you, it's an incredibly very courageous move on your
I thought I saw a natural through line and a natural, of course, like extreme contrast between ours, but I think they would be interesting to talk about contrasting with each other.
I'd agree. Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be some interesting debates generated. So to get started, would you like to introduce us to your son?
Yeah, my son is a television show called Nichijou. It is a Japanese cartoon.
Or anime, as some
anime
call it.
Yeah, and I'm super excited to actually get to talk about it at all, because I am a kind of a weeb. Like I'm an anime liker since I was like 11 or so. I don't really like to talk about it because I have very specific tastes and interests that I like even within people who like anime, it's kind of hard to relate to other people. And it's one of those things that's like almost all of the things that I'm nerdy about, like furry comics or heavy metal, like unless you were initiated and kind of immersed in it as a teenager and kept it up, like trying to introduce it to someone else as an adult, it can be really bewildering. Like it's like I've made the mistake so many times of like I'll find a new show that I really like and I'll get excited about it and I'll make Chris, you know, my spouse, watch it. And then, you know, like after the episode is over and the ending credits are on, I'll turn to her and I'll just see her just ashen face. Oh, I mean, she's gotten, not angry, but she's gotten frustrated with me on some occasions. Like, why did you make me watch this? Why did you think I would like it? And it's like, oh, I forgot. Like, you have not had like a drip feed since you were 11 of this stuff.
It's like you have to develop an entire different context of appreciation.
Oh,
for it. I think it's sort of like absolutely. How, you know, how non-Western music can have stuff that sounds like atonal.
Yes.
It's like you have to develop an ear for it in the sort of the same way that you have to develop an appreciation for the tropes and styles and things that come along with anime.
Yeah. And this is like absolutely not to say in any way, like I've watched a lot of anime. There are, you know, white American Westerners who've watched a lot more anime than I do and you know, speak more Japanese than I do, which is almost none. Like, it's not a substitute. Like, you can't, like, really understand or know Japanese culture by watching anime. That's kind of a silly notion. But there are certain things that you can kind of pick up or be familiar with that help. And it's actually rewatching after I recommended this show to you that I kind of forgot, like, oh, wait, this show is actually, there's a lot of esoteric Japanese shit in this show. It's called Nichijou, which I think it kind of means like humdrum every day. When they localized it into English, they called it My Ordinary Life, which kind of makes sense. It's a slice of life anime. It's an ensemble comedy, and it takes place in a high school, because of course it does.
Like about maybe 50 to 60% of all anime takes place.
No, I would say way,
way higher.
A way higher margin. Because, I mean, the anime industry is very dependent on a specific market who, you know, is able to spend money on it. And that market just kind of like appeals to, you know, high school students or people who are interested in stories about high school students. So just like so much anime is about high school. But this is the one that like it's my favorite. It's my favorite Japanese cartoon out of all of them. It's the one that like I would be less hesitant to share with other people and encourage them to watch. Because it's really pretty and it's really cute and it's really funny. And it's kind of organized in sets of vignettes. And there's a very, very, very loose skeleton of a plot, but it can diverge from that. And there are like sets of characters, usually pairs of characters, especially the minor characters who we can kind of take a little detour with and see how they're doing while going back to kind of the main characters. And I think the tone varies between just kind of like very banal stuff and very kind of punny humor, which again, it's like, it helps to have like a glancing understanding of Japanese, maybe if you can kind of get a couple of the puns. And then some of them I would describe as like gently absurdist humor. But I think like it's hard to find a main character, but I think the main character for me is Nano.
Really? Because I would say is like Yuko, maybe.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, at the very beginning, like, I think Yuko gets a lot more screen time, especially in the first half of the series when, like, the two of them and their friend groups, like, don't know each other. But But I think it's like when, like, that perspective of, like, the show's called My Ordinary Life, it's from her perspective that that is coming from.
And I think Nano's the only one that really has, like, a plot arc in it.
Yes.
No other character particularly changes at all.
No. It's really, yeah, it's about her and, like, her pursuit of having an ordinary life. I mean, she has an ordinary life, but not really, because she is a humanoid robot.
Yes, like a wind-up doll. She has a giant, like, key on her back.
Yeah, it's like she's physically indistinguishable from any other teenage girl, except she has, yeah, a turnkey on her back, which her creator put on there because she thinks it's cute. And her creator is Hakase, or the professor.
Who's a very young girl.
She's like a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah, or yeah, I don't know.
Or younger.
Yeah, like six.
Actually, yes, like 6, 7, 8, 9, something like that. And it, like, the whole household, like, it's the Shiranome household. It's like the whole premise is like this really, like, the power dynamic and, like, who's the head of the household is in total flux, because, you know, Nano is the creation of the professor, but the professor, while she's a super genius, has the life skills and the emotional intelligence of, like, a child.
Uh-huh.
And so Nano is kind of under her authority, but also, like, is her caretaker.
Yeah, it's kind of a mom in a lot of
ways.
Yeah,
definitely a mom. And it's like she's got a very timid personality. She's very focused on and motivated by what she thinks other people think of her. So, like, and, like, the professor is not troubled by those anxieties. So, like, she ends up getting, like, bullied and into spoiling her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the cat, Sakamoto-san, is a cat they adopted, and the professor invented a scarf that allows him to speak Japanese. And because he is technically in cat years older than both of them, he, like, wants to discipline them and boss them around and be the head of the household, but he's a cat.
Still victim to cat behaviors.
Yeah, and they're like, no, like, you're a cat. so it's like the whole, like, it's so interesting, like, the back and forth of how they treat each other and how they not necessarily, like, try and manipulate each other, but, like, how there is, and, like, there is no, like, head of the household per se who can, like, hold that role. So it's always in flux. And it's, like, a central part of Nano's dilemma, because, you know, she wants to go to school, but she has her responsibilities, and, you know, she loves the professor and wants to take care of her. But she really yearns to be ordinary. She wants to pass as indistinguishable from a normal girl. She wants to be ordinary, which is why it's, like, the key bothers her. And the professor is just, like, you know, she's a little kid. She doesn't really have that empathy. She doesn't have that understanding of other people's needs.
I feel like overall so far, this is coming across as more serious and dramatic than it actually is, though.
I know. I guess I'm talking about it because it's, I'm focusing on it because, like, that's like an undercurrent that, like, I mean, the show is incredibly light and breezy and silly. And, like, the more you watch it, the more you kind of, because I've watched this 3 or 4 times all the way through now, and it's like those, like, kind of the emotional core gets more apparent. But it's definitely, yeah, it's like it's an undercurrent sort
of
thing.
And so the rest of it is, like, there's a mix of following the three schoolgirls, Yuko, Mio, and Mai. Is that it? Mai.
Yeah, Mai. Yeah.
Okay, Mai. Who are just students, and mostly it's just, like, you know, bickering over questions like, you know, homework, you know, taking tests, things. But they have these little absurdist interludes a lot of times.
Playing games.
Mm. And then, but, you know, the absurdist parts are often, like, heightened into, you know, like, ultra cliche, like, anime cliches often, like, you'll have, you know, things where they're just, like, you know, guns appearing, people,
oh,
like,
yeah,
powering up.
Yeah, there's a...
like, you're super, getting super serious all of a sudden, like, dramatic.
Yeah, and, like, very, very, really detailed, like, rendered flourishes of animation, which, like,
Because the default state is they're relatively like minimal, is like just big eyes and a mouth style anime, not even like.
Yeah, they're rendered very simply. It's like most of the time the characters don't have, they're drawn without noses. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a cutaway when drawn with a very simple nose shape.
It totally changes the vibe.
It's so uncanny. And like there's a whole scene where like it's basically a wordless scene where they're stuck in the rain at a shrine. And the whole time they have this blank expression with like they draw the noses in, and it's like the contrast really heightens how weird they want you to feel about it. It's I think that's like a really smart cartooning choice. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like there's lots of like just like an argument, and it'll be rendered like a fight scene in a seinen manga like Dragon Ball Z or something, or Fist of the North Star, where there's lots of speed lines and smoke and fire everywhere. Mm-hmm. When it's really like a super petty thing, it's like it's very aware and kind of, you know, pinching the cheek of other styles of anime.
Mm-hmm. So overall, the way that I responded to it, I think that I totally acknowledge, understand, and can appreciate a lot of the things that you see in it and see as like being super unique and interesting about it. That said, and also, you know, I genuinely laughed multiple times at a lot of the more like little absurdist asides in it, but it just didn't have enough maybe plottiness or maybe either plottiness or jokes to like keep me wanting to watch it more.
Yeah, I could totally get that. Like, yeah, rewatching it, I was kind of like, oh wait, this show is very Japanese.
There's so much. Like, I understand there's different social norms in Japanese culture with regards to female voice pitch, for example. But there's so much shrieking in it.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, that is a thing about anime that it's hard to get used to unless you've just had it going
had it ingrained
for years and years
you.
And years. But yeah. It's like voice acting is very much in anime like subdivided into character types. Mm-hmm. And it's like if you're a woman under 30, like your voice is going to be pitched up way higher than it is at a normal comfortable speaking voice. Except for the inverse with certain character types, like Nanogahara-sensei, like the chemistry teacher who's obsessed with Nano when she eventually gets to school.
Yeah.
Because, like, her character type is, like, the predatory older lesbian. She wants to kidnap the robot to, you know, like, so she can study her.
Yeah, so she'll always have a deeper voice.
It's kind of a wink, wink, nod. And, yeah, she has a very specific voice that is not that pitched up sort of thing. It's like, it's... It's very jarring if you are not super used to it.
Yeah, and I mean I my background with anime is I used to be, you know, in probably around the same age that you got into it, you know, 11, 12-ish. I was also, you know, big anime fan. You know, I got into it primarily from English dubs that were on, you know, Cartoon Network or whatever at the time.
Who are your boys?
You know I'm a Dragon Ball Z girl. Vegeta all the way. You get Vegeta.
Yeah. And like Cowboy Bebop.
Cowboy Bebop, Tenchi Muyo.
Oh, yeah.
What's the other space cowboy one?
Oh, shit.
Outlaw Star.
Outlaw Star, yeah.
Yeah, you've seen all of those. You know, Ranma. Well, Ranma's the one that this brought to mind a lot. Ranma 1/2.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Ranma, I mean, you know, Chris is, you know, super into Ranma, and I was too. Actually, Ranma was my first anime. Mm. And it's still a big deal. It holds up. It's still really good.
Yeah, I remember it. I haven't checked in on it in a while. But I think in the intervening years, as I have just not been watching anime as much, I probably have lost a lot of the appreciation that I built up for, you know, all of the different anime tropes and standards.
Oh, that makes total sense. And like anime, like just in the last 10 years has changed so much. And a lot of it has to do with the market. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of dependent and focused on a certain very small subset of super fans. I would say like superhero comics here in the United States. It's like a small group of people who have a lot of disposable income to spend. And so things get more and more and more catered to them. And like the culture of anime becomes more insular and more focused on what they like.
So do you think how much of it is fan service based?
Oh, tons of it. Tons of it. I mean, like incest is like a topic of comedy.
Hmm.
It's like a genre. It's like a, oh God, there's a dreadful show. It's like, I can't believe my sister is so cute or something.
Oh God.
But it's the whole thing. It's like, isn't it cute? Like, it's a romance, but they're related. It's like, Japan? Can we talk?
Like, no.
Are you okay? And of course, like, and it's like, you know, it's like, this is not reflective of mainstream Japanese society. It's like the people who are into this stuff, like, you know, are marginal and, but it's like, you know, they're the super fans. They're the ones with the money to spend. So like that, they're the people who are being catered to. So it's like the culture is like, so what you see in anime, like why everything is set in high school. It's just the focus has been like narrowed a lot, but at the same time, there's a lot of drag, but there's a lot of really cool stuff going on now. But like, you know, that's another conversation.
So, I mean, I guess, yeah, I haven't been keeping up with it. Like, it seems like the 90s were kind of, maybe it's just because that's the anime that I watched. But that seemed like it was kind of a golden age in terms of like really interesting, durable, innovative. Oh, Trigun, I forgot to mention. I love Trigun also. But you know, like Cowboy Bebop and, you know, all the other ones in that era.
I'm very neutral. I wouldn't impose any sort of like golden age on any time period because, you know, there's so much material and like so many genres and so many things that like appeal to people.
Mm.
And like why I like this show so much is like, I got to an age where I kind of outgrew action anime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really don't like anime that's aimed at boys at all. Like, I like romance. I like slice of life. I like anime about hobbies and sports and stuff.
Mm.
But, punching, very little, it like does not appeal to me. So it's like there's so many like iconic shows and like huge things like Naruto or One Piece, which are like really like culturally important, that I just could not care less about.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think they're bad or is, it's just not for me. It's like I like stuff about kissing or
it's more I could see it as being relaxing to watch. Like, is that an element of it for you? Because it's definitely, you know, when you're watching something that's like plotty, like I would say Naruto and, you know, that sort of ilk, it's, you know, you watch the end of the episode and there's a cliffhanger and it's supposed to be incentivizing you to want to watch the next episode, right?
Yeah, see, Dragon Ball Z absolutely killed that for me.
It took it too far.
I really loved it. I really loved Dragon Ball Z. I was so on board, and it was like somewhere in the middle of the Frieza saga, and I just realized it's like I'm not having fun.
Yeah, because like, it's just like nothing happened. You got, you know, one little tiny little nugget of progression per episode, and then it was just up next time.
Yeah, and it's like what Chris was talking about, the plague dogs, and it's like when she's really feeling rotten, she's really feeling bad. Like, she can watch the plague dogs, and it's, like, this cathartic experience,
mm-hmm.
and she feels better. I don't do that so much. Like, I return to, you know, kind of, like, creature comforts, you know, kind of gentle, you know, funny sorts of things, pretty things. Like, the show, like, Nichijou is very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I love, like, it's made by Kyoto Animation, which is just a studio that is... You know, their main output is, you know, very pretty things with not a lot of substance. But it's a comfortable thing, you know. It's like a nice, you know, warm cup of tea.
So you're more into escapism, whereas Chris likes to just, you know, embody the misery.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, we meet in the middle and we watch, you know, Deep Space Nine together. But, but yeah, I am more prone to, fall back on sort of light, gentle, comforting things. And Ichijo is definitely that represents that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see watching individual episodes or watching one a week and really liking it. I have to admit, I only got through 15 episodes. I didn't get through all 23.
Oh.
It's too many hours.
So that's interesting because it's like it shifts in the middle. Like 15 is like the cusp where like it starts.
So I almost got to a change.
No.
Just after Nano started high school, basically.
Yeah, it gets more plot heavy after that. Like that's kind of when the plot starts, is halfway through the series.
Okay, so as she's trying to conceal her robot nature, basically.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like it's funny. It's like the plot doesn't start until halfway through, and it's
it says something about it, right?
Yeah, and like I was trying to binge watch it, and it's like it's my favorite thing, but it's like trying to watch 26 episodes or you know, 5 or 6 a day, you know, you do kind of find yourself looking for some other form of stimulation. You want something different. I totally get that.
Yeah, but yeah, I could see in small doses, I would probably enjoy it a lot more. I think just trying to binge it, really, for me, binging only works if the plot is like, oh, I really need to find out what happens next, right?
Oh yeah, and it's broken into skits, mm-hmm. like so. It's natural, like, you know, it's like it's so easy. Like, there's so many videos. It's like funniest on YouTube, like funniest Nichijo. Bits or something, you know. It's like you can consume it, you know, like popcorn a little bit,
mm-hmm. just like little pieces.
Yeah, but it's like you can only watch it on YouTube. It used to be streaming on Crunchyroll, which is an anime kind of streaming service, mm-hmm. That I really like. There's a lot of cool stuff on there, but it was actually a tremendous flop in Japan. It was a huge failure. I think it might be more popular over here than it is there. And Bandai, who had the rights, just kind of let them go fallow.
So why do you think so? Like, why do you think it was a flop in Japan?
I have no idea.
It seems pretty standard good anime.
Yeah, and it's made by Kyoto Animation, which is a very popular studio. Like, they've got a handful of like big hits under their belt, and. Yeah, like have access to capitals for very high production values. I really don't know because like I love it a lot, but you know it's like I don't know, it's a very saturated market. There's a lot of you know stuff going on. Maybe it fell through the cracks or something. But yeah, so Bandai you know let the rights kind of go and like I like freaked out when it wasn't available streaming. I immediately got on Amazon and like bought a box set DVD like that was in, you know, US DVD region. It's like, oh, ships from Malaysia. Well, nothing is, you know, not bad. And of course it was the sketchiest bootleg. I was so mad.
Yeah.
I want to fling it across the street. You know, there's a good chunk of episodes on available in HD on YouTube.
Yeah, I had to watch some of the ones where you have the busty anime girl background around 3/4 of the video.
Yeah, we found a way to work around it. It might
100% legal.
Exactly, yes.
A totally legal way to get anime that has not been released in America.
Yeah, like I'm glad you watched it. I think I stand by my decision that it's like this is one of the very few animes that I would recommend to an adult who hasn't like kept on board or knows nothing about it. Like at the very least, there's at least some enjoyment that you can get out of it.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think there's some of the little bits, I either wanted them to commit to more or spend more time on.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where they, like, they go through all the trouble of animating it, and like they end and they skip away to another sketch, really, really quickly.
Yeah, and I don't know, sometimes where it's like, we'll have a really absurdist thing that's great, and I love, like, so my favorite example is the principal wrestling with a deer.
That's one of my, that's a, yeah, that's
which
a
I loved it, but why here's the thing, if I were doing it, and this is, Kathy is now anime director, do we have to have Yuko watching it and like commentating on it?
I
think it'd be better if it was just the principal's wrestling the deer and that's it. Because instead you're wrapping it into like, oh, there's a person who has a sense of like logic and like, oh, this is a weird thing that's happening, observing it in the anime, but it'd be better if you just let it be.
Yeah. And I also could have saved a lot of money on like all the cutaways of her just going, ah!
Yeah. And just had to be like maybe a couple minute scene of the principal getting totally owned by a deer. Like I would have adored it. And I already did. I mean, I laughed definitely out loud during that scene.
The last thing I would say about it, because like we keep going about it, it's like, oh wait, there's actually some like very Japanese cultural references that might be alienating, but I actually had fun going through this one and kind of like pausing and Googling. Like there's a scene where the professor like draws on Nano's Dharma, which is like it's like a hollow, like kind of pot thing that has a face. And it's like a caricature of the founder of Zen Buddhism.
Oh, that's after what that Googling. Was.
It's called a Dharma, and okay. She like draws on it because it's missing an eye, and like she messes it up and you know gives it glasses, and like Nano is so upset by this, and like she really loves this thing, and like after learning about it, and it's like I have no idea what this thing is. Like this could just be like a decoration. It turns out like dharmas are kind of good luck charms, but it's a type of thing you give to somebody to encourage them to accomplish a goal. And Nano is, you know, the goal-oriented character. And so it's like that would explain like why this is so special to her, and also like why how frustrating is like the professor, who's the person who's holding her back from that, is the one who like doodles on it and messes it up.
Yeah, so I mean that went totally over my head.
Yeah, I mean it did all like three times I've watched it before until I decided it's like, you know what, like I don't know exactly what this is, I'm gonna go look that up. So it's like there's tons and tons and tons of like little things like that,
so we just need an annotated version of it with like commentary.
I would love that,
just and explaining like, what every single reference means.
Oh no, it's like I've
I think you should
I don't
do
know.
It. You should do it.
No, I'm so not qualified. Is that, like, I, first of all, I don't speak Japanese, and like that is so important
okay,
to
step
like
one,
understand.
Learn Japanese.
A lot of this stuff, and it's like, I understand, like, and like I can get some of the puns, like drawing a tengu and calling it a tango, and like that, like no, that's not right, but. Look it up. Google it.
What is a tengu?
It's a yokai. It's a
heavenly
bird,
dog.
Bird man thing. Look it up later. But yeah, like that would, I mean, preferably, yeah, it's like someone who grew up in Japan to like, yeah, annotate it. That would be really fun and really useful, because yeah, it's like, yeah, I understand maybe like 30%,
and I probably understand way less because I definitely don't get any of the puns.
But it's still, yeah, it's a cute show and I like it, and I'm glad you got some enjoyment out of it. Should we rate?
Yeah, I guess it's time to rate. Let me think of what the scale should be for this guy. Let's do, what's the name of the Buddhist good luck charm thing?
Dharma.
Daruma. Okay, we'll do it on a scale of those.
Esoteric Japanese cultural object.
Esoteric. How many esoteric Japanese cultural objects does this deserve out of 5? I would say on that scale, I mean, I don't really know enough to be able to say accurately. I'm guessing, I'll say that, okay, here's my guess. If I were Japanese, I would probably give it 4 out of 5. As an American, I can only give it 2.5 because I don't get any of the references.
Okay, that's fair.
But yes, I think it was definitely worthwhile and definitely reminded me that anime was a thing that I enjoy and still sometimes enjoy.
Yeah, I really think you would enjoy the second half of the series more because there's more plot. And there's some fantastic weird skits.
Then maybe I'll slowly watch it. I'll progressively watch the second half. But I'm not on quite as tight a schedule.
Cool.
Welcome back to our show. In this segment, Mouse and I will discuss My Son, which is Tim and Eric. Now,
great job.
So you basically suggested Tim and Eric, but you didn't specify which Tim and Eric property. So I gave you a little bit of a mix. Granted, it's mostly Tim and Eric, Awesome Show, Great Job, which is, you know, their main, what they're probably most commonly known for. But I also gave you a pre-Awesome Show sketch and a during or post, I think probably it was a Funny or Die short, which was Morning Prayer with Scott and Bear. Mm-hmm. I was trying to cover multiple bases, but totally didn't even touch things such as Tom Goes to the Mayor or Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie, or Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories, which is their most recent thing. So I'm going to save those. Those are now officially reserved for subsequent shows.
Okay, good. Yeah, because my exposure is mostly the Awesome Show, Great Job. And I still, I guess I was a little presumptuous because I suggested Your Son for you for this episode.
That's okay. Max technically did in the first episode, too.
But I mean, I know it's like, it's something that's like a really big deal for you, and I've had difficulty in the past getting my head around it. Mm. Like I still find Tom Goes to the Mayor threatening.
It is kind of, yeah, I agree.
It's, that one I'm still like,
it's a very grim worldview in Tom Goes to the Mayor. I think more so than Awesome Show.
Yeah, but I'm just now at the point of being able to appreciate the Tim and Eric like sketch experience and like enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Before I found it a little bit off-putting. Mm-hmm.
As most people do, you know, you can't be faulted for that.
But there, I mean, like I said, like there are things about it that like are so. I mean, the basis of it is like you don't know what's coming next. Mm-hmm. Like so much of the humor is in the editing room, mm-hmm. like a weird video toaster wipe that you aren't expecting. That's like in the middle of someone's mouth, or like a segment of audio that goes on just a little uncannily too long,
or way too long,
and then. Or cutting away to something in a way that's really unexpected. It's about the unexpected, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. And it was interesting. So I thought of this while we were talking about Nichijou, because if there, we don't fully have the cultural context to appreciate all of the attributes. I feel like with Tim and Eric, both of us, even though we're from different regions, as we mentioned at the top of the show, have the sort of the bleak Americana and sort of the 80s, 90s, like basic TV kitsch element.
Yeah, I think we both like grew up with like USA Network. Or even like beyond that, like not even cable, but just
local TV.
Local TV, VHS, all of the straight. I mean, there's whole projects, like Everything is Terrible, that is like sort of a, you know, it's a humor project, but it's also kind of an archiving project.
Yeah. It's a sort of a lost way of life.
It really is. It really is. I'm about to have a conversation with someone about like being a furry on the internet in the 90s. Uh-huh. And just like how rapidly like culture changes since like the internet became, you know, more and more ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. And like all of the aesthetics and like the things that we grew up with as kids, sort of being lost to time and just remembering all the uncanny weirdness of it. Like,
yeah. And that was so seen as sort of standard now or back then, but you know, now they're seen as sort of curiosities and viral videos almost.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, this was a weird, really weird thing that was on TV. Like, I don't know, you know, my favorite is like John Dacre as just like that was a thing. I mean, when I was in elementary school, I was in a like local public broadcasting thing documenting how my class went on a field trip to a historical one-room schoolhouse. Like, it was ridiculous. And like, I'm sure if I could dig up the VHS that I'm sure my parents recorded of it, like the production values were probably not very good, but like that's what life was back then.
It was so weird. Yeah, it's like I had a rotary phone and watched bootleg wrestling VHS tapes with my friend, and they would take me to their other friend's house. He had an AK-47 by his bed.
Okay, well, I didn't have that experience, but
I grew up mostly in Arkansas.
So. Yeah, slightly different.
Slightly different, although I'm sure there's plenty of kids in Michigan.
Oh, sure, not as many in the area of Michigan that I grew up in, but the further north you go, further north and west you go, the more likely that type of stuff is.
Or more where Chris grew up. She grew up in Leslie. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that culture there, also.
Yeah, that's a place.
It sure is. I know so many people from that town. I don't know why.
It's a very small town.
I know. I don't understand. Anyways. God,
I love Michigan.
It's a weird state.
I mean, it's a place. It's like, I mean, like I was born in Alabama, like, and like growing up there, like, you get this, like defensiveness, because like people condescend to you, mm-hmm. and it's like, what the fuck do you know? Like, but like Alabama is definitely a place.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like I love it, and despise a lot of it as well.
Like, yeah, but there's a reason. It's like only people who know it are really allowed to shit on it.
Exactly. It's like, and like, I really adopted myself into becoming a Minnesotan. Mm-hmm. It's like when I moved there, even though it's like, you would think it would be like the polar opposite. Like, I found so many through lines of Minnesota culture to like coastal Southern culture. Hmm. It's like, I immediately felt at home, and it's like, I still long for Minneapolis. I still kind of wish I lived there.
So do you feel like a Coloradan now, having lived in Colorado?
Absolutely not. It's a really alienating, weird place.
Oh, really?
For me to live. I mean, I love living here because this is where my spouse lives, and like, I love her more than
states,
superficial things.
Uh-huh.
Like, But you know, yeah, the places I really felt at home. And it's like, yeah, like I'm a Southerner, but like I really hate Atlanta, but I love Minnesota. I love Minneapolis, and I love Seattle. Although I actually, if I went back, I haven't been there in several years. If I went back there, I probably wouldn't love it because, oof, like the gentrification going on in all of these places. Like,
yeah,
man, Atlanta is crazy.
Yeah, well, it's one of those, like, booming Southern cities, right?
That's, oh, like, it's like growth. I hadn't been there in like 3 or 4 years, and then we visited our parents over the Thanksgiving holiday, or you know, my parents, mm-hmm. and you know, the end of Watchmen,
yes.
where you know, like the interdimensional, like, squid being got just like warped into the middle of Manhattan,
uh-huh.
and like just like by the sheer bulk of it, like killed that millions of people,
uh-huh.
just by taking up space. Atlanta is like that, but condos.
Millions killed by squid condos.
It's nightmarish. Like, oh my god, it sucks so bad. But oh god, we're getting so off topic.
Yeah. Anyway, well, so yeah, it's interesting. So one of the things that I've been trying to resolve to do on new episodes of this podcast is to encourage more tangents. So I'm fine with it. But yeah, let's talk about how you felt about Tim and Eric, or at least the things that I gave you of them.
I could say I'm kind of a fan now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really want to watch more of it. I'm still very cautious. Because like I said, it's just like there's something about, like, there's an uncanny element I notice is like, they will play characters, but they will also play characters who are Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim.
Uh-huh.
But they're inhabiting different roles depending on like what sketch they're doing or what the theme of each episode is going to be.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of quality really puts me on edge. Or it's like an analogy I have is like Michael Ian Black.
Mm-hmm.
The comedian.
Yep.
It's like I always feel like Michael Ian Black is off-putting to me because he's Michael Ian Black, the character played by Michael Ian Black.
Yeah, and he definitely has a persona, which isn't necessarily what he's like as a person.
Yeah, it's, or it's like yeah, or it's like, but he's still representing himself under his own name. Or it's like throwing back to like my thing again, because I can't. I have to talk about me.
Uh-huh.
You know, like my the character Mai.
Uh-huh.
She's kind of an inscrutable personality.
Yeah.
And she's never not fucking with people.
Uh-huh.
That's her thing.
Yeah, she's my favorite character. I forgot to mention that. She's my favorite character in the show.
Okay. I didn't want to speculate. I didn't want to guess, but actually, yeah, I could have figured
out. Like,
That's certainly because, you know, like I'm a very earnest kind of person.
And you don't want to think that someone is fucking with you in general.
Oh,
like that
God.
They might be being insincere.
It's my nightmare. Like Hans Gruber in Die Hard when he first meets John McClane. Uh-huh. I mean, that's an amazing performance. It's an amazing scene. And yeah. It's my nightmare of like.
That's really interesting because, you know, Tim and Eric do it to a certain extent in Awesome Show, but Tim in particular has like heightened it and continued it. Like if you follow, say, like On Cinema, which is his and Greg Turkington's, you know, quote unquote film criticism video series, he has been heightening it progressively over the past several years to really create the Tim Heidecker character, which who's basically this like Donald Trump neocon, like total asshole.
Oh fuck. Oh,
you
probably
hate that.
Zach Galifianakis is also heavily featured in the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that same thing. It's that inscrutable, although Zach is more like overtly threatening and unstable. Yeah. It's like when he's like the child acting teacher.
Uh-huh.
And
Well, he's like, Terry Green in that. He's not technically Zach Galifianakis.
Well, no, but yeah, like he has a character, but it, like, he does that in his stand-up where it's like he has a hair trigger and you never know when he's going to just like start shouting at the top of his lungs.
Yeah, that makes it exciting. I mean, I could see uneasiness definitely in real life, right? If there's someone like that. But for a performance, especially live performance, that throws a lot of potential excitement in, I think at least.
Oh, yeah. I don't really go to see things live anymore, but that might be fun.
Yeah.
He's got a stand-up special in like from a couple years ago in San Francisco, like Live at the Purple Onion, which is hysterical.
Yeah.
What's that dude up to?
What's that dude up to? Zach Galifianakis?
Yeah.
He's got an FX comedy show right now where he plays a professional clown. I haven't watched it yet, but I think I need to.
Oh, great. Well, you're on top of that.
Yeah, I follow TV. I just watch a lot of TV. That's mainly the only thing. So I guess one thing I was particularly interested in sort of getting your reaction on was Morning Prayer with Scott and Bear, where they play these sort of two televangelists for this unspecified, very strange religion. And interview a variety of guests. How did you feel about that?
Well, that's one that I've actually, that was the one thing that I didn't actually watch.
Oh, really?
No, I meant to, I forgot to, like, I got to the cat thing and then I got distracted, actually, but I had seen it before.
Okay.
So I have a little bit of context, but it's like a similar thing because like I grew up in the I grew up in the South with a kind of an evangelical Protestant background.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it at the time threatening and uncomfortable. But maybe you should refresh me and.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to convey. I mean, there's a lot of things. The things that I particularly like about it are, I like the concept of fake religions, fake vaguely threatening religions such as theirs, where they praise Hosanna and his apparent Messiah, Rang Dipkin.
Oh yeah,
they read the star charts. And
were you ever into Frank Zappa?
No, not actually. Although I have some various friends who are into him.
That's me. No, I don't know. Like I was really into Frank Zappa in high school and I still, yeah, it's like, I mean, his stuff is, God, that could be a son.
Future son.
Oh shit. But, he like as a goof, like started a fake religion called, Church of American Secular Humanism, which of course the acronym is Cash. Pretty clever, right?
Yeah, I get it. I understand. So yeah, religions are funny. I mean, I find them inherently funny, kind of, as I've moved further away from religion in my life, and now I'm like, you know, godless heathen.
Did you see the Book of Mormon?
No, I haven't seen that.
Neither have I don't like typical musical theater, and I also like personally dislike the South Park boys.
Yeah, that's my main problem, is I really hate South Park.
Yeah.
I cannot, I don't, there's so many people whose taste and brains I respect who love South Park, and I just don't get it. I can't understand it. I cannot appreciate it. It kind of drives me crazy.
There's a lot of specific things, like they really have it out for transgender people. And it's just kind of like that's one of my sticking points. It's like if you're on that side of the coin, then like we can't go on this journey together. But like I don't know, like they're from Colorado and Colorado is a very specific place.
This is what we've learned, I think, from this podcast so far. Every place is sort of specific.
It is. And like Colorado is very, it's a Western state. So it's like, it's weed,
And cowboys.
And cowboys and craft beer, which, like, whatever. But also guns. Oh, there is so much gun junk in Colorado, like almost more than like in the Southeast where I grew up, and like that's like, or in Arkansas too, just kind of like Southern Midwest, Western edge, frontier South, just very like, I mean, yeah, I grew up in a very gun heavy environment, and it is like obsessive out here.
Well, why is it? Is it purely? Is there like? Because there's a heavy hunting culture, or is it just like gun fanciers?
I would say gun fanciers.
Huh. Which to me is the worst kind.
I mean, you can go hunting. Like, we live very near the Rocky Mountains, and like, of course, there's a healthy hunting culture, which I, growing up in Arkansas, I have learned to remain neutral mm-hmm. on, because yeah. just like, you did, like, you're just, you're
you
just
don't want to start that argument.
Yeah, I don't want to start, I don't want to get beaten up every day of my life. But no, this is definitely like kind of AK-47 type place. And I don't know why, because like, I don't know, color is great. There's also like, there's like a lot of I don't know, maybe like a survival thing. Like, do you listen to Bunker Buddies?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's a great podcast about like survivalism, but like if there's an apocalypse event, like Colorado would be a fabulous place to bug out to.
Well, that's where all the characters go in The Stand to set up new societies.
I don't know about that, but like when I did watch The Walking Dead, I was like, get out of Georgia, go to Colorado, like go to Wyoming, go to the Mountain West. Like,
yeah, why would you be near population centers after a zombie apocalypse? It's just stupid.
Because you're being written by idiots. Ugh.
Yeah. That actually is probably a good answer.
Oh, Lord. Tim and Eric, though.
Tim and Eric. Yeah, I mean, I specifically included a couple things that are very important to me, including like Spaghetti.
Yeah?
Who's my boy? Spaghetti's my boy? Maybe he's my son? You know, because he spooks people.
Gotcha.
I think that the episode where Tim turns into a cat is one of my favorites also.
Oh my God.
What else did I have? Oh, the one where Tim goes to hairdressing school and Eric wears his big African hat.
And then the cummerbund with no pants.
It's the C-bund, yeah.
It's the... Yeah, like... I guess, like, this is an interesting show. Like going back to the idea that, like, they use their real names and they're playing kind of fantasy versions of themselves. And they in the show refer to each other in a fictionalized setting as like their best friend. Like, are they best friends, or are they, you know, like, are they just like friends who do a show together?
Just work and
are
partners.
Work partners. Or
my sense is that they are very, very close friends.
I think they would have to be. But yeah. Also, it's like I like the idea of like Tim and Eric as like characters in this fictional universe who are like kind of in a purgatory.
They're sort of like suffering through. Well, so you could say,
or like alternative universes. Like, yeah, this is Tim and Eric in this universe, but like, which brings back like back to like the inscrutability of like them as real people is like constantly playing different riffs on being characters.
And I mean, also like Tim dies, I think 3 or 4 times throughout the show, like throughout the series.
Which yeah, he does.
Dies and is reanimated, or his ghost comes back. That the one I almost include the episode where he comes back to life and is given the ability to manifest like little tiger statuettes.
Yes, actually, you did.
Oh, I did. I included that.
Yeah, you did. It was fantastic. And then, and then by the end of the episode, like his life force has been drained by Eric's avarice
wanting to make hundos from
Again, it's like that idea of like 80s and 90s culture. It's like you can have a business that takes the fuck off selling like chintzy little statues.
Yeah, that was the 90s.
Oh my god. It's like, yeah, it's like, I mean, I guess that like there's still a bit of that culture still going on, which is like QVC. Like there's still, it's like there, like there's still old ladies watching Pat Robertson and sending him their social security checks, and there's still people like just like hooked onto the queue. Actually, my grandparents visited last spring to help us with some repairs in our house, and they brought us 2 boxes of records. And a lot of them were from my granny's, my great grandmother. And she was one of those ladies who like sent in all of her money to the TV preachers, until my grandparents eventually found out and kind of had to
cut her off.
She had Alzheimer's too, but
yeah,
they kind of had to, but like I have all of her Jimmy Swaggart records now, and I don't know what to do with them.
Just digitize them. Get them digitized.
Oh, God.
You don't want to have non-digital records. Unless you do, unless you have a record collection, in which case. Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I did inherit a lot of great, like, Tennessee Ernie Ford records and Elvis gospel records. And one really weird, like, Halloween spooky sounds record.
Nice.
But it's, like, it's fucked up. It's just like women screaming for their lives. On like both sides of the records, there's no like dragging chains or like Frankenstein going.
It's just screaming.
It's all women being murdered.
Man, it's, you just need to play that at Halloween. Horrible. And just put it on the old turntable.
No, we played it once. I don't think I ever want to put it on again. Like Chris was, I put it on as a goof, and like Chris is like, "What? Can we? Like, this is enough."
Wasn't enough just screaming.
Oh God.
So okay, I have to say this. I have to air my beef on with Tim and Eric.
Oh.
Because I have a reservation that didn't used to exist. Because I let's call it the entire affair, the whole affair. I was a totally like unreserved fan, and like the only thing that I've ever been even mildly internet famous for was writing this essay in defense of Tim and Eric to people who don't find it funny, which resulted after a fashion in being briefly employed by them. Employed is a very loose term for what actually happened, to redesign their website. And I was noting when I was Skyping you today, I still have their Skype address, so I'm gonna sell that online. Anyways, they ended up not ever paying me and, like, just totally, like, ghosting me.
And you did the work.
I did most of the work. I basically, like, I made it. I sent a version of it to them, like, what do you think? What changes should I make? And then never heard from them after that. It's really hard sometimes because I really love Awesome Show. And I love, you know, a lot of selections of their work. But it's often very hard to separate these sort of lingering feelings of bitterness that I have from that sort of, you know, more distance fan appreciation. Is this my sad music about my sad?
Yeah. Life? Well, I mean, Tim did mention you by name on Mark Maron's podcast, so that's sort of like currency.
Once by name, once by a girl. Both times they've been on Mark Maron, I have been referenced in some way. So I guess, is that payment? Is that worth the, like, $1,000 to $2,000 they owe me?
No, it isn't. Not at all.
No,
fuck.
I guess not. Anyways, I have feelings. And occasionally I just get real head up about it. And then I'm just like, yeah, shouldn't worry about it. Don't ever meet your heroes. It's an aphorism for a reason.
I met Ted Danson.
Oh, and, oh, How'd that go?
He was very handsome and nice.
Okay. So, all right, we've proven the aphorism wrong.
Well, he wasn't really a hero of mine, but I got to see when I saw Bored to Death, which he was the only good part of. I could be like, oh, I met that guy.
Yeah, Ted Danson. Oh, I didn't include the, there's a Tim and Eric sketch called Tiny Danson Man, where Ted Danson gets shrunk down.
Oh, shit.
There's a Tiny Danson Man that's actually a small, which is Zach Galifianakis, and Tiny Danson Man, who is Tiny Ted Danson.
I love all the celebrity cameos. Like, you get, like, Ed Begley Jr. burning his face.
With a seafoam, yeah.
With his cell phone.
You guys, his cooling gel.
Oh.
Cool down your hot face.
I gotta.
Just get this.
Take one of these home.
Yeah, it's really an extraordinary show. I mean, awesome show in particular. I think, you know, the stuff they made before and after has not quite lived up to it, because I think there's just this, like, weird confluence of, I don't know, factors and events that led to it being created.
I think, yeah, like, it was really fortunate for them to land in that particular time, that particular culture of Adult Swim,
mm-hmm.
when they were really, really, really throwing spaghetti against the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, especially the first season, it's even more all over the place than anything after, because it's really just like, hey, we have a live action show now. What can we do with that? And they're just, like, completely opened up to, like, anything they think of they're going to put on the show, which is a total, like, creative freedom that you don't see in most TV.
It was wonderful. I think they benefited from Adult Swim, I think, cheaply licensing anime and also, like, having access to the Hanna-Barbera archives to make shows like, C-Lab?
Mm-hmm.
Not Aqua Teen.
Aqua Teen.
But they, it's like, if you can do something on the cheap, whatever, go for it.
It's great, and I think they still do it to some extent. I think they're too successful now, almost. I don't know, maybe not. I guess they still have done stuff that I find really amazing, like unedited footage of a bear, or the other Alan Resnick one, Live Forever As You Are Now. The sort of ultra ultra late night very very weird art type stuff. But
not too familiar with that.
One of these days, I'm going to have an Alan Resnick This Is My Son, which is going to go deep into the weird. It's going to go deeper than anything else.
Is this like David Lynch Rabbits weird, or?
So one thing he did. So he did first. He did this sort of YouTube project called Alan Tutorial, where he did this series of progressively weirder and weirder, just awful tutorial videos, which. It's, you know, it's never really directly shown. First of all, you know, his face is never shown because he's, like, holding the camera while he's doing a tutorial in every episode. But it's clear that at some point he is, like, kidnapped and taken to this, like, featureless room and forced to do tutorials. And eventually it's implied that he escapes. He breaks through the walls and escapes while, like, smeared in his own filth. It's very weird. I mean, I love it, I adore it, and most people do not like it.
Oh, lordy.
And also he and he has a comedy sort of group out of Baltimore called Wham City Comedy.
That's a fucking place too.
Yeah,
Baltimore.
But so they, I think, have, you know, have churned out. So they did a few things for Adult Swim. They sort of, one was an infomercial about how Alan Resnick was like a guru that was going to be able to digitize you so you could live forever in a computer. And then an unedited footage of a bear, which is actually a fake ad for some unspecified medication to possibly cure depression. It's unclear, but will make an evil version of you that kills you.
Oh, nice.
Anyways, they're both just, like, profoundly weird and really great. But that's for another episode.
Well, cool. Well, my computer battery's running out, and I have to go to dog training class. where they'll teach me how to sit and be a good boy.
Yeah, get yourself trained.
Should we rate?
Yeah, let's rate.
Tim and Eric,
rate it.
Okay. I think I will give it 4 out of 5. Video toaster wipes.
Okay. Solid. Very good. Excellent.
No, I'm super excited to do a deeper dive and get into more of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm always happy to hear people want to watch Tim and Eric, and I very eagerly await finding out your opinion on the rest of it. Okay, so in conclusion, is there anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, so I live the majority of my life on the internet, on Twitter. I am at Funny Animal Book. And you can find links to everything else I do, including my webcomic, There Go the Dogs. You can find that at goyedogs.com, like ye, like Y-E. The old-timey
yeah dogs
thing. Yeah dogs. That one has is gonna have some explicit gay furry sex in it, so
be prepared.
I don't know if that's an incentive or a deterrent, but
depends on the person.
And yeah, like last week's guest Chris is my partner, and we do a lot of work together, and we are Goat and Mouse. You can find us at Goat and Mouse on Tumblr and all that. Google is your friend. So,
and she said last week that your Star Trek podcast was going to come back. Is that true?
Yeah, we're working on it. We just finished Deep Space Nine, and we've got a lot of stuff to say about it. It's a big deal. Yeah. So our Star Trek podcast is Academy Truants. You know, we're on Tumblr, we're on Twitter, iTunes, etc.
So get online and look at all that stuff and listen to it. Get online. I would like to plug this podcast, which you can get online, as you probably know because you're listening to it. Please, if you've got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Looking for those sweet stars. I'm talking about five stars. Number one podcast. We're shooting for it. You can follow us on Twitter at ThisIsMySon. And you can follow me on Twitter for all of my interesting insights at MySocks, M-I-S-O-K-S. Well, it was a pleasure having you on, Mouse. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you so much. Oh, gosh. I already have another son in the hopper, so I would definitely...
So many sons.
Oh, I'm ready. Yeah, I've got another son to torment you with.
Well, I can't wait. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next week.